Our topic, though, is one of dealing with the family. And as has already been mentioned throughout this lectureship, the need for transformation, the battles that are fought or battles that are fought in the mind. But we see in our text in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, it says, "Be not conformed to this world, be ye transformed." And how, he says, "By the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." See, it is a battle for the soul that begins in the mind. It's a battle that begins in the mind, as Peter has said in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 through 16. That's why he was able to say, "Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind." He says, "Gird up the loins of your mind and be sober and hope to the end of the grace that is brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ as obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust and your ignorance, but as he hath called you as holy, as holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation, because it is written, be ye holy for I am holy." It's a battle that begins right here in our minds, and the things that are going on around us in society influence us. And most of the time there are things that influence the family in a negative way. But godly transformation is something that is always going to affect us positively. It's always going to affect the family in a positive manner. But sadly to say, many times when we look out into the congregations where we worship, that is not the case. We see there's a weakness that is continuing to grow, it seems like, and that is that there are too many sisters sitting alone. Too many times our sisters are sitting here trying to rear their children and bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, as said in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, because the fathers have neglected that role that has been given to them as spiritual leaders of their families. And because that is the case so many times, I'm wanting to direct our lesson. I want us to think about it in a way that is going to focus on the fathers. Because too many times, dads, we're not doing our job. And even if you're not a dad, or maybe you're thinking, I'm having to do this on my own, well, it still affects you. These principles that we're going to look at, it doesn't matter if you're a mother or a father, or if you're just a Christian without children. The principles affect you as well. But a father who fails to transform himself and truly be transformed to Christianity is one who has little effect in bringing his children up and training up a child in the way he should go, as the proverb writer says in Proverbs 22 and verse 6. He's not going to do anything but to allow his children to have rain and to run wild, and then they're going to wreak havoc upon society that we live in. They're not going to be good for those around them. I want us, though, in the time that we have, to go to the book of Genesis. In the book of Genesis, we're going to look at two fathers. And we're going to look at these men as according to Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. In the beginning of Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, it says, "Be ye not conformed to this world." Well, it doesn't take us long. Turning through the holy text, we get to Genesis chapter 19, where we come across a father who has failed to transform, but rather conformed himself to the world that was around him. And that is the father Lot. And this was not a confirmation that took place overnight. It wasn't something that one day Lot woke up, found himself in Sodom, and there he was surrounded by these things. But instead we see that he made a decision long ago, standing upon that high point looking over the plains of Jordan. There he looked out upon Sodom and he cast his eyes there because the plains were good. And in Genesis chapter 13 we find the beginning of this choice. He said that he was going to take this land. And this was something, though, that was not going to be good. It was already said, Genesis 13 and verse 13, that the men of Sodom were wicked individuals. Said they were wicked and sinners before the God exceedingly. But yet he still made his choice. Sadly, Lot had not either thought of or not guarded against the truth of the fact that's found in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. And that is that evil communication corrupts good morals. Who we surround ourselves with will take its toll and take its effect upon ourselves. And fathers, we need to think about these things. Many times we take jobs. Many times we have a career move and we think about these things of where it's going to put us on the ladder and our success. And we're going to have to move into a city or move into a location. And the first thing we think about is schools. We say, well, what are the schools like there? First thing we need to start thinking about is, what is the congregation like there? Is there a faithful congregation of God's people that I can meet with, that I can worship with, and have a good effect on the community? If not, then we need to make a different choice. But see, he made a choice looking upon the material things that day, and he did not realize what was said by the psalmist has been said for us in Psalm 1 and verse 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor sitteth in the way of the sinner, or standeth in the way of the sinner, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. You see, Lot was there. Lot was there surrounding himself and partaking of that city. He was part of them. We're going to notice how far corrupt he has become. But first, I want you to realize that we cannot sit long at the devil's table without partaking of his fruits. I don't recall who had said it before, but at first, heard that first there's friendship with the world, James chapter 4 and verse 4. And then there's a love of the world, 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 17. And then finally, we're going to conform to the world. We're going to be conformed to it and not transformed away from it. So we must be conformed. So let us consider, though, Lot's degenerated state as before the messengers of God had gotten there. Before they arrived on the scene, let's turn to Genesis chapter 19. In Genesis 19, the messenger of the Lord was going to arrive at Lot's home in verses 1 through 7. And they've come to this house, and you remember how bad the people of Sodom were. It said that they were pressing up against the door, trying to get in, trying to overcome these men, and saying, let them bring them out to us and let us know these men. These individuals of Sodom were so corrupt. But look what he says. Look what Lot says in verse 7. Lot speaks to these individuals, and he says, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Notice what he calls them there for just a moment. There's a kindred relationship that is born in the midst of this conversation. He says, brethren, deal not so with them. Don't do this evil deed, as he's speaking to the people of Sodom. He's associating himself with these individuals. But then we see as he goes on, what does he say in verse 8? He says, behold, now I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out to you and do you to them as is good in your eyes. This is not a man who is going to fulfill the Lord's command in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10 of be thou faithful unto death, because he readily offers up that great gift of purity, that prized possession that should be his of the purity of his daughters. He says, here, have them. This is not a man of faith. This is not a man who is going to remain faithful. Instead, he gives over. But look and see, the material pleasures we see that Lot has enjoyed for such a time is now going to have to pay a price. Confirmation always has its costs. When we conform to the world, yes, we may enjoy benefits of it for a time. And Lot may have. He may have benefited financially, may have benefited by living there in that area, but it would cost him dearly. You see, in Genesis chapter 19, as we continue on through verses 12 through 14, we see that he had some scornful sons-in-laws. His scornful sons-in-law would not hasten to his word. Too long, we will see, that he had partaken part of that city. It says in verses 12 through 14, and the men said unto Lot, hast thou any besides son-in-law, thy sons, and thy daughters, whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-laws. See, he had lost whatever influence he had over these individuals. They were mocking him now. They were looking at him and saying, what are you coming to us for? Who are you to be speaking to us? And many fathers have spent countless hours chasing the riches of this world. Many fathers have spent the countless hours chasing the riches of this world. They've neglected family and neglected their duties as a father. And instead, all they've done is work, work, work. And then one day they wake up and see their children and their son or their daughter following in the same footsteps. They've gotten to a point of retirement age, and they look back and they say, here's my son. He's forsaking worship and putting his job before God, and I'm going to go talk to him now. But you know what? He's just following the footsteps that you've laid for him. When we put our work and put our employment and many things of that nature before God, our children are going to follow behind us. When we allow the effects of this world to take over, we have little to say. It's not do as I say or do as I do. But we also see in Genesis 19, verses 15 to 17, there's a hesitating husband. The hesitating husband is Lot himself. You recall, you see, in 15 it says, in the morning they rose and the angels hastened Lot and says, arise, take thy wife and thy 2 daughters which thou hast, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his 2 daughters, and the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and sent him without the city. Said that he stayed around even after the warning was given. He hesitated on leaving. He hesitated on making the right moves for himself and his family. He did not consider there that he had his daughters and his wife to lead, to take the spiritual role in leading, as many husbands have failed to do. But God has given that role to us. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 23, and Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, the spiritual leadership role has been given to the Father, and the Father must assume such a role, must take such a role in order to be effective. When we fail to do that, and many fathers do, many fathers are going to put work, sports, fishing, hunting, whatever, they're going to do whatever they can do besides worship. And I see it from time to time in Marlin and different places. I have sisters there that their husbands are unfaithful Christians. And it's sad to say that when hunting season comes around, you're not going to see them. You're not going to see them, especially opening weekend. You can forget about it. But you know what? They have placed the world before God. They have placed the world before God, and they are leading their children wrongly. Long ago, God had recorded for us in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, if any man provide not for his own, especially those of his own house, and he deny the faith, and is worse than an infidel. What about the individual who fails to provide the spiritual leadership that he ought to provide? Where does that leave him? But not only was there a hesitating husband of confirmation's cause, but there was a weak wife in Genesis chapter 19, verses 24 to 26. Now, in Genesis 19, 24 to 26, we find Lot's wife, and everybody remembers Lot's wife, how she looked back longingly upon the plains of Sodom and there and was turned into the pillar of salt, and everybody's familiar with that text. But I want you to consider something, and that is because of the society that we live in. This is where you step on a lot of toes usually. In the society that we live in today, it becomes necessary sometimes for women to feel like they have to go out into the job and work. But you know what? I have a great admiration for mothers who have done without the indulgences of this life. Done without the indulgences in order that they can devote themselves to rearing up and nurturing their children. You know what? Yes, women can, but you know what? It's never to the detriment of their children, never to the detriment of their family. But many times they will throw themselves into the arena there, Satan's arena of work, outside the home, and many things begin to happen. How many families have been destroyed because of infidelity in the workplace? How many families do you know of where infidelity is caused because of the relationships that are built outside the home? Those are things that must be guarded against. Those are things that must be, we must warn against. Dysfunctional families, broken homes are evidence of this truth. But most of the time, we can contribute that also to the failure of the husband to be the husband that he ought to be. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, we find there that likewise ye husbands dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as to the weaker vessel, being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. We have a responsibility, husbands, to our wives as well, but we also need to guard against those things. Confirmation's cost would continue, though, to mount up for Lot. His wife died, yes, and he would mourn her loss. Soon time would heal such wounds. But the next cost was one that we would seem unbelievable to try to bear. And that is seen in Genesis 19, 30 through 35, where Lot's daughters then plan their incestuous seduction of their father and bear an offspring from him. We can't imagine such a thing to take place in society that we live in today. And it may not be an incestuous relationship of daughters becoming pregnant out of wedlock. But you know what, fathers? There are many daughters who are becoming pregnant out of wedlock. It still is increasing in society in America today, but sadly to say, it's in the church. You know what? There are fathers who are not guarding their children as they ought to in such things because they are weak. Because they are weak and they are not taking the role. They will not stand up against such things as immodesty. They're not telling their daughters, no, you're not going to wear that. That's our role, Dad. There are some things that they ought not wear. And you know what? Not only is it things such as that, but it's things such as proms. They're going to let them, well, we're not going to take a stand against the prom. I'm just going to let them go. They're just going to go and observe, you know. They're not going to take part in it. You know what? That's where most girls lose their virginity, is at the prom. Talk about one-on-one dating. You don't want to take a stand against that because that's just outdated if you want to take a stand against one-on-one dating. You know what? You allow them to go out into places. Satan's going to put the temptation before them. And what's going to happen? You're going to have a grandchild out of wedlock. How many individuals could put their name where Lot's is when they say that the wicked society had taken its influence on his daughters? Had taken its influence on his children? We can't expect our children to spend hours and countless hours with this world and not be affected by it. He also, the cost is seen in offensive offspring in Genesis 19:36-38. There, those children that were born of his daughters, the Moabites and Ammonites, would continue to wreak havoc and cause problems for the children of Israel throughout time. And the effects of the choices that we make as fathers today are going to last even long after we're gone. Just as Lot's choices had an influence upon his children, our choices as fathers will have an influence upon our children. And so therefore we must take what the proverb writer said long ago in Proverbs 22 and verse 6, apply it in our life and realize the truth of the maxim that is found therein. If we train up a child in the way he should go, when he is old, he shall not depart from it. If we take the time to properly bend and to mold and to train that child as we should, then the results will be seen. And see, that's the good news. The negative part of Romans chapter 12 and verse 2 is not being conformed. Be not conformed to this world, but rather be ye transformed. And being transformed, we flip back a few chapters in the book of Genesis to Genesis chapter 6, and we find there that story of Noah, that account of Noah that we so much love and appreciate and know so well since we were children. One of Noah, a father who was surrounded by wickedness, one who was surrounded by a wicked world, no different than Lot, seemed at all, except even worse. Because, see, Lot was just in the city. Noah was in a whole world of wickedness. But, see, Noah is a contrast of Lot. I know that was last year. But this, it was a contrast between Lot and a contrast between Noah here. And that is, Noah was not conformed, but Noah was transformed. We see Noah's transformation taking place here in Genesis chapter 6. All the world is light and wickedness, and Noah has found favor in the sight of God. Just as it's true that confirmation has its cost, transformation has its treasures. The treasures are seen in the first part of Noah himself. He's not like Lot. He wasn't the hesitating husband, but instead he's a preaching patriarch. He's one who is willing to go out and teach and to preach and to try to make an effort to affect the world around him. You see, Noah had an example of leadership in his family, not only by the way he lived, but what he said. He taught individuals. He preached to individuals. And he is an example, and he serves an example for all those who would be called a preacher of righteousness. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 5. Noah did it right. He knew what was going on around him and was not affected by it. He endured times as we must now and others have before, as in 2 Timothy chapter 4 verses 2 through 5, when people didn't want to listen to what you had to say. Sometimes people just don't want to hear it. And the folks that were around Noah didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear what needed to be done. Yes, we have a responsibility, and our Christian responsibility is to carry the gospel out into a lost world, Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20. But we first need to take care of it right here at home. See, it begins in the home. How many preachers have you heard of who have lost their children because they were so worried about the world? How many preachers' children have gone astray? It begins at home. And we see that the truth that is found in Genesis chapter 1 of yielding fruit after his kind still holds true with Noah. Because Noah was a preacher of righteousness. He had a willing wife, not a weak wife. His wife was one who was willing to follow her husband's lead. And when a husband puts God first, it makes it easy for the wife to want to yield and to follow the lead of her husband. You know, sisters don't want to follow a man who just says, "I'm the head of the house." They don't want to follow someone who just espouses it, says, "You know what? God's put me in charge. I'll wear the pants. I'm the man." No, it's not that. A man who puts God first, a man who is doing and putting the kingdom first, and a woman who is putting the kingdom first is going to want to follow his lead. She's going to want to yield to him. We see, though, that this is the case with Noah's wife. She wasn't going to try to defy God, subvert his rules of authority by telling her husband, "You know what, I'm the one who wears the pants of this family." She wasn't one who was going to be a 21st century woman of trying to say that I'm in charge. But she was a willing wife. He also had superb sons. Noah's sons were ones who would follow their father's lead. His sons were ones who would be saved because of a direct result of both parents putting God first in their lives. When both parents put God first in their lives, then the fruits will be seen. The fruits will be seen by individuals benefiting from their children. You know what? If mom is the one, or if dad, either one, if only one of the parents is putting God first, where does that leave the children? It leaves them in a tug of war. Because which example do they follow? Do they follow mom or do they follow dad? Do they follow mom when she goes to worship, or are they going to stay home with dad while he goes fishing? Or are they going to go to worship with dad, or are they going to stay at home with mom while she sleeps late? What is it going to be? You see, when that happens, then it sends a mixed message to the children, and the children have a less likely of remaining faithful later on in life. You see, Noah's sons were ones who benefited from both parents who put God first in their lives. Noah would not become one of those fathers, as we see with Lot and Eli, who failed. You see, Lot paid the price, but Eli did too. In 1 Samuel chapter 3, verses 11 through 13, in verse 13, you remember how the things were said of Eli because he did not restrain his sons when they did evil. His sons had become vile and he restrained them not. And his fathers would pay. Not only had superb sons, but he had dedicated daughter-in-laws. You see, unlike Lot, who was unable to have influence over those closest to his immediate family, Noah was able to do so. You see, Noah's daughter-in-laws benefited from being married to godly men. Just as the opposite is true, that evil communications corrupt good morals, you know what? Those that we hang around that do right influence us to do right. When they were married to godly men who had godly parents, they themselves benefited from it. And so we must realize that. But I want us to think now for just a moment the remainder of that verse, Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. The remainder of that verse shows us not only, as we have seen, a transformation and a confirmation. We had Lot's confirmation, Noah's transformation, but we're going to see Christ's determination. In that, he says that we're going to, as Paul continues on, he says it's going to be through a renewing of our minds. We're going to be not conformed, but be transformed through the renewing of our minds. James said long ago in James 1 and verse 8 that a Christian is not to be a double-minded individual. He's not to be double-minded. He's to be one-minded, a single mind. And the mind that we're to have is the mind of Christ. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. So if we're not going to be conformed, but rather transformed, it's going to be with the mind of Christ. The renewing of the mind, and the mind must be that of Christ. And Christ's mind is one that we can know. It is a mind we see in Luke chapter 22 and verse 42 is a mind that yielded. Christ had a mind that yielded. He, being God the Son, here he is. He says in Luke 22 and verse 42, nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done. He was yielding. And that's the attitude that we must possess. We must have a yielding mind to do the will of God, yielding mind to the Scriptures, a yielding mind to His work. We must also have a mind of priority that Christ had. In Luke chapter 2 and verse 49, when His parents came looking for Him, He said, "Why are you looking for Me? Didn't you know I must be about My Father's business?" He had a mind of priority. His priority was doing the will of God. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, God tells me as a Christian that my priority is to do the will of God. I'm going to seek first the kingdom of God. And if I seek first the kingdom of God, in all decisions that I make, I can't go wrong. When I'm going to make a decision for my family, when I'm going to make a decision for myself, when I'm going to make a decision of where I'm going to live, what I'm going to do, if I put it in the context of Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, I'll make the right decision every time. Seek first the kingdom of God. But not only did he have a mind of priority, a mind that yielded, he had a mind to teach. He had a mind to teach others. If we could look through the text, we see texts such as John chapter 7 and verse 14 and John chapter 8 and verse 2 and Mark chapter 1 and verse 22 and on and on and on. The list could go where Jesus was gathering to teach the people. Brother Ramsey mentioned earlier talking about fruit from John chapter 15. Talking about being fruitful and teaching others. He asked, who have you helped to convert? Who have you taught? Who have you tried to influence to be restored as an erring brother? You know what? A mind to teach. If we're going to have the mind of Christ, we're going to want to teach those who are lost. We're going to want to teach those who are outside of Christ and those who have fallen away from Christ. That's what Paul would say in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2. Teach men who are able to teach others also. Continue this cycle of teaching. That's what the Great Commission is all about. Teach them and then baptize them, teach them some more. It was a mind of leadership as well. Jesus said unto His disciples, if any man will come after Me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow Me. Following after Christ, following the example. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, we can be examples to one another. As Paul said, be ye followers of Me as I am of Christ. Yes, we're going to follow those examples. We're going to have leadership in mind. We're going to have a mind of love as Christ had in John chapter 15 verses 12 to 13. This commandment that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man would lay down his life for his friends. A love for the brotherhood, though. The brotherhood is in shambles right now, it seems like. You see divisions throughout the brotherhood. All going on because of different, I think it's just pride. Amen. I think it's just pride. If we just lay pride aside and just get down to the Bible, these things could be resolved. But instead, we had the brotherhood splintering even more and more and more. If we had a mind that loved, true love for one another, and true love for the brotherhood, these things wouldn't be so. Because it would sadden us to the point that we would do something about it. It was a mind of example as well. Christ is the example we should follow. He left us an example to follow. Follow in His steps, Peter said. Follow in the steps of Christ and you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with it. And you can mark, brethren, Philippians chapter 3 and verse 17. Paul said, mark them that you have for an example. There are brethren who are trying to do right. There are brethren who will do right. They're going to do what this book says. Those are the ones you mark and those are the ones you follow after. Only as they follow Christ. Don't be caught up in these things. Well, I'm going to go over here because this guy's my friend. Or I'm going to... Don't be caught up in that. Not here. The Bible. And then you'll be truly transformed and never conformed. Don't conform to those things. Don't be conformed. And so our plea is the plea that Paul had long ago. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And we will be determined to never be conformed, but to ever transform daily, then you know what? We'll benefit from it. We will benefit from it because we will have determined dads, we'll have supporting spouses, and we will have outstanding offspring. And that's transformation's effect upon the family. It's the transformation's effect upon Christians. Thank you for your time. It's the transformation's effect upon Christians. Thank you for your time.
It's about time to begin. If you want to come in and have a seat, please.